Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I get to welcome my friend, Dr. Stephen Smith, to the podcast. Dr. Smith serves as the senior pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock, Arkansas. Now, prior to his current role, he served as vice president at Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, and also on the preaching team at Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas. Stephen, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, friend. Grateful to be here.
No, I had to truncate your bio there, but I don't want to just cruise by it. I want to say two words. One, about your own family and background. You're a fourth-generation preacher.
That's right.
And so fill in our listeners on who you are and who your family is and the relationships there and the connections there.
Yeah, so my mother is an Eliff, is her maiden name. So Southern Baptist audience made Tom Eliff, Jim Eliff, Bill Eliff. So she's the older sister to those three. And then my dad was Bailey Smith, was active in Southern Baptist life, most of his life as a pastor and then later on as a vocational evangelist. So, yeah.
So where did your dad and your mom meet?
They met at Ouachita.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's right. So there had actually been two generations of our family. I didn't go to Ouachita, but they met at Ouachita. And so that was it. That's how they connected.
Very good.
Yeah.
And so now you're serving at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock.
That's right. Yeah.
And tell us about the ministry there.
Yeah, I've been there 3 years and just thrilled. The people have just been incredibly gracious as a church that is 127 years old, so has a rich history. So I'm not... don't feel like I'm trying to create something new as much as step into the stream to what God is doing, enjoy the favor that he's had on the church for the years, and we're really excited about the future.
And you also serve as a senior preaching fellow with the Spurgeon Library here on our campus.
Yes.
And teach for us periodically in our doctoral program. And you're here this week teaching.
Yes, and very excited, co-teaching a theology and culture class with Jeff Dodge and also with Dr. John Mark Yates. And love it. So grateful to come in and still able to supervise a couple of dissertations here and there. So what a thrill to be called full-time to the pastorate, but come to teach every once in a while. It's wonderful.
Well, you're a winsome follower of Christ and a good friend. So for me, it's a delight to have you in Kansas City and on this campus. And then today, getting to be in the studio with you. So today we're going to be talking about preaching the book of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
And what I have done the last couple of years as a part of the podcast is I'll have different preachers or authors here who have a particular commitment to, interest in, expertise with book in the Bible.
Yeah.
And so we've talked with different authors and individuals about different books. And so today we're talking with you about Jeremiah. And you have written a commentary on Lamentations and Jeremiah.
Yes.
So tell us about that project.
Yeah. Well, it's a part of the Preaching Christ series that B&H has done. Thrilled to be a part of it. So if I could be totally honest, I think I drew the short straw at the end of this when Dr. Aiken called me because he got all the good stuff. You know, of course, he committed Psalms to himself and got the pastoral epistles and all these type of things and said, would you do Jeremiah? And so I agreed to it, excited about it, and then looked at the how much Jeremiah and Lamentations text it was. It was, I think, the largest of all the texts that were chosen. They took Psalms, as some of you know, in two volumes. But out of doing that, though, there was something really transformative in my life that took place based on our life circumstances, and God used the book of Lamentations to really be a defining moment. Perhaps we'll get into that if we have time. But I was just really grateful to how God was gracious trying to wrestle through the text.
So before we get into the book of Jeremiah in particular and your commentary on Lamentations, Jeremiah, a word about your pulpit ministry. You're a preacher, as we mentioned already. You serve at Emmanuel Baptist Church. Tell us what you've been preaching on, what you are preaching on.
Absolutely. I started with the parables of Luke. I enjoyed the parables. I had an interest. I'd probably preached about five of those before, but felt like I wanted to get into a gospel, but not make a two-year commitment right off the bat coming in and let them kind of get used to that. So I did the parables for about that. I still think in semesters. That took about a spring semester from January to June, essentially. Then did the book of James. And then did some in the Psalms. And then after that, did Lamentations and really enjoyed it. I don't know if I may have enjoyed it more than the people did, but I took a chapter a week. And so I didn't take every paragraph unit. But what that does is it forces you to give some type of biblical background. So What are people to know in terms of the history of the nation of Israel and how it fits into redemptive history? You're forced to talk about that, which is wonderful. It gets you things that you wouldn't normally do in the Gospels. We've also done Nehemiah, which was just extremely enjoyable. And just 2 days ago, we started Exodus. And so really, really excited about that.
So how long will the series through Exodus be?
Exodus will take me to a Labor Day, essentially.
Okay.
So I like this rhythm. This is just kind of, we've fallen into this. But I take January to deal with something practical in the church. So we did a series called Move, Where is God Moving You? How is God moving you to move someone else? That was really a setup to Exodus because, you know, I've been studying Exodus for a year or two. Your mind's already there. Our theme for Exodus is God on the move. So Moses interacts with God in the burning bush, and from his presence moves other people. So moved people, move people. This is the idea behind Exodus. It also is a leadership moment because God is moving us internally inside the church, and we're also entering into a new phase of a mercy ministry, a build out that we're doing just right on our campus to meet some pressing needs inside the city. And so anyway, Exodus will take through Labor Day. So I'll take some Sundays off through the summer, but that's great because Labor Day feels like, in a school culture, a reset, right? It just feels like it, almost like the beginning of the year. So I'll do Labor Day generally in another series or group of series, take Christmas off, and then repeat the cycle. So we've done that the last 2 years, but right now I found that's a really healthy way to do the rhythm.
Very good. So we're talking today about preaching the book of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned about studying the book and working on the commentary. If I heard you right, God used that in a particular way in your life in a timely way. Unpack that for us.
Well, approaching Jeremiah, we were in I'm getting really personal at the beginning here, giving the application of the sermon first, if you will, but we were in a time of transition. It was out of, frankly, reading the book of Jeremiah that God used that as we were considering leaving Southwestern and going into the pastorate. That was difficult because we've been in Southwestern for 12 years, and everybody who's made a move has identified with that. You identify that, you give your life, you're invested there, you think you're going to be there forever. But we knew that God was making us restless. And out of that, I read Lamentations chapter 3. So this is the famous passage, and Lamentations and Jeremiah both, for being books that are densely packed with tremendous amounts of judgment and hard passages, also have some incredibly notable golden passages, right? So you think Jeremiah, Lamentations 3 would be one, Jeremiah 29 would be one, Jeremiah 31 with the New Covenant would be one. So really some remarkable passages that are gems in all of this dark, hard coal, if you will. But let me just read. This is Lamentations 3:19. Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercy never comes to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. And then let me skip down to verse 25. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he should bear his yoke in his youth. And so that verse stuck out with me because the idea between bearing the yoke in the youth is that even though if you're not technically young, you know that whatever God's bringing you in the future, if you want to endure that, you've got to bear down right now. So yoke was a heavy thing. So the yoke of the Lord is something we put on and we bear. And I think of that in New Testament terms as the instructive discipline of the Lord. So John 15 tells us that if we're bearing fruit, God's going to prune us. Incredibly counterintuitive to think that the difficulties come in my life may be an expression of God's pleasure with our growth. Hey, you're doing well, so let me bless you with some more challenges and hardship. But it's an instructive discipline. It's a good thing. And so in that same way, put on the Lord's discipline also reminds me of Proverbs chapter 1, that the person is wise who turns into the discipline of the Lord. So this is a mental image of a kid backing into a spanking, right? That never happens. But this is the idea that when God corrects us or leads us, we welcome that because it is an expression of wisdom to embrace God's discipline of the Lord. So here's this picture in Lamentations chapter 3 of someone receiving good, healthy, instructive discipline of the Lord. But the book of Jeremiah is not about instructive discipline, right? It's about corrective discipline. And that comes to a head in Jeremiah chapter 27, and I'll read verse 12, that Jeremiah 27, 12. To Zedekiah, king of Judah, I spoke in like manner, bring your necks under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him. So this is incredibly counterintuitive. He's telling the king, of course, the northern kingdom is gone. He's left in Jerusalem in the southern kingdom, and he's telling him, go, leave. So you're telling God's king to leave God's chosen people, to lead God's chosen people away from the promised land. And it's almost like everything against what the Old Testament was for. And yet he's telling them to do that because actually his relocation of him was mercy. They were going to bring down judgment on Jerusalem. God was going to do it. So before he did that, he gave him one last opportunity. So the part that was personally transformative for me was realizing, and this is just a devotional sense, I know it on an exegetical sense, but sometimes leaving a place where the Lord lets you is actually the Lord's will. I mean, Lord brings you to places and he takes you away. And the fact that he's leading you away doesn't mean that wasn't God's right thing for the season. That was his moment. And then he led you away. So here you see this deep contrast in Lamentations 3, doing the right thing, putting your neck under the yoke of God's discipline. And then you see in Jeremiah 28, someone who refused to, and it cost him everything. You know, they gouged out his eyes after they could kill his children in front of him, and then they killed him. It didn't have to be that way. He could have left, been in exile, perhaps been restored later, but he lost everything because he refused to be under the discipline of the Lord.
You know, we have pastors, ministers, preachers listening to this podcast, and many of them are comfortable preaching, you know, a comfortable series to the book of Philippians, a manageable series to the book of James. But the book of Jeremiah, even conceptually to preach or teach through it, for many, it just strikes them as daunting.
Right.
I guess help us to perceive the accessibility of the book.
Yeah.
Help us to appreciate the applicability of the book.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say some very specific practical things that hopefully will help those that are listening, but also say something on a philosophical level. So even on a theological level, our doctrine of preaching is that God has revealed himself in his son Jesus. Jesus is revealed in the word. So what's driving a text-driven approach is that I want to represent the words of the word so that they can see Jesus, and in Jesus they see God. How we do that is a methodology that I think is adaptable to situations. So that we're doing is important, how we do it. And so I'm learning that as a pastor, you know, more and more. So all that to say, you can be text-driven and expositional and take huge chunks of scripture or small chunks of scripture. So being text-driven and having a methodology that represents a proper theology of preaching does not dictate a certain length of text. So we think of the expositors we love, you know, and grew up with, 2 to 10 verses, you know, or they're going to glory in the fact that they spent 4 years in one verse, you know, and that somehow makes us great expositors. But it's just as exegetically taxing, theologically rich, and exciting to take huge chunks of scripture. So, back to the practical part, I would say, you know, take Jeremiah in one book would be one way to take it. Another thing to do, if you wanted to preach Jeremiah, and this is what I've done, but didn't want to preach it, just preach Lamentations. You've got 5 chapters. You're preaching poetry, which we don't think about that because we think prophecy is just prophecy, but all prophecy is written in the genre of poetry. So you've got to figure out Hebrew parallelism and all that stuff. So there's fun little exegetical challenges that are there. Then you've got the glorious part where it hits kind of a pinnacle in Lamentations chapter 3. And in fact, some people think that the whole book of Lamentations is a chiasm in and of itself. So mm-hmm. You've got the dark parts of chapter 1 and chapter 5. And if that's the case, then the actual middle chapter, of course, within 5 chapters would be chapter 3. The actual middle verses would be 31. And so let me just read Lamentations 3:31. For the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, he will have compassion according to the abundance of his steadfast love. For he does not afflict from his heart or grieve the children of men. What an incredible promise. So God has done all of these, you know, we would think horrifying judgments, but the heart of Lamentations is, of course, Jeremiah's laments attached right there to Jeremiah, because it's the same author who's lamenting all the things. The very heart of that is, this is not God's desire, and the heart of God is not a desire to grieve people. So back to the practical part, I would tackle Lamentations first and deal with the sweetness that God brings instructive discipline, he brings corrective discipline, but at the end, his heart is not to grieve us. And then, you know, you could take Jeremiah in larger chunks, or you could take it in smaller ones. Philip Graham Ryken has done the Preaching the Word series we did in 60 sermons. That's a lot. That would take me about a year and a half as a pastor with breaks. So you would have to assess what your people were ready for.
Thematically, the book of Jeremiah, you've already alluded to some of this, but help our listeners just just to grasp the big picture
yeah.
of some of the major themes coming through Jeremiah.
Right. Well, the context, of course, is God's judgment. Jeremiah's this last standing prophet against God's judgment as the southern kingdom is being taken. His place in history is significant because historically the next big events are the restoration through Nehemiah. So historically, he's very, very significant. But the big theme is God's grace, I think, as expressed in judgment. And even though these horrible judgments are coming, and they're real, and you have to deal with them and address them, they're especially in the first 28 chapters, hard judgments you have to work through. But all of those judgments are a mercy. Because the book of Jeremiah is a mercy. The fact there's a prophet is a mercy. If God wasn't merciful, there would be no Jeremiah. God would just bring the judgment, right? And the fact that it doesn't rain down and actually gives them an opportunity, every prophet crying out is God's way of saying, it doesn't have to be that. You don't have to be judged. Stop it. Turn around. And so the analogy I like to think of is a police officer. If I get pulled over for a speeding ticket, what I'm upset about is what I've done. The police officer isn't punishing me. He is a agent of the law, mm-hmm. right? But all of my angst toward that works out against this officer, right? And so Jeremiah is the officer. He's coming in, didn't create the laws. He's just telling them. But what they're really working through is their own guilt expressed back toward Jeremiah, but really ultimately toward God.
Very well said. Now, in the commentary that you've recently written, of course, you deal with both books. Give us a sense, based upon your work in that commentary series, what is a manageable rhythm to preach through Jeremiah? You know, and before you answer the question, I had Mark Dever on our campus here in recent days for Nine Marks event. And, you know, Mark's preaching style is to typically move through bigger portions of Scripture.
Right.
Now, you mentioned many of our heroes are guys who would preach, you know, several years in one book and maybe one small book. And so there is latitude for pace and rhythm, and that gets touches on things like one's own gifting as a preacher and one's own comfortability mm-hmm. in a preacher and what a church is prepared to absorb and what they can't absorb. And so there's latitude and
right.
and what an appropriate or acceptable rhythm is. But based upon your study of the book of Jeremiah, how would you encourage us to be thinking?
Let me reflect on my own context and then maybe back into an answer. But in taking Exodus right now, again, I'm taking essentially about 9 months because that fits into the rhythm. They may have been or church before in longer books, but I'm not sure that they have. And so I'm fearful to go longer than a year.
Okay.
I think I want to go John next is just what I'm thinking right now. And if so, I'm going to begin it in the fall because when we take a break for Christmas and come back, it'll feel like we're starting a new series. So we can finish that by Labor Day, hopefully of 21 or go deeper into 21. So knowing that, I think you could actually do Jeremiah in about 30 to 40 sermons comfortably. I would want to take the last major sections between 41 and 44. I would take those all at one sermon. And you know, Jeremiah ends with a recap of the entire events. And so those are things where it feels perhaps different, but I think I would take my time through chapter one, through the call of Jeremiah. I think when it got to the end, I would do like I'm doing in Exodus. When you have all the details of the tabernacle, I'm putting a lot in one sermon. Because my point is not to mine out all of the nuances of the Hebrew language. My point is to point to how this pitches to the theme of the book and pitches to the salvation history. And I think you could actually that's more effective in a larger chunk.
Difficulties in Jeremiah. What should pastors be on the lookout for that knowing going into the book, okay, this could be angular.
Yeah.
This could be difficult to
right.
deal with.
Well, my first admonition would be don't run from it. Mm. There are issues about the problem of evil and how God deals with evil that are mentally unreconcilable this side of heaven. I think it's perfectly fair to preach in a way that doesn't pretend we are clear about things where God isn't. So be comfortable with that. At the same time, I would say don't run from the hard passages. There, God is raining down judgment on his people. That takes some mental thinking about. But the fact that God put that in there makes us think it has to make us appreciate Jesus more, right? Because it pitches to the redemptive historical context. And because of that, it does make you appreciate more. And I think they'll have more gospel clarity about what God has done for us in the atonement because they understand the way he treated even his own people, which is a remarkable thought.
Now, you mentioned the redemptive historical context. Give us a sense as to where one might find the gospel in Jeremiah, where one can connect that book to Christ.
Yeah. Well, the big part, and I'll just read it, of course, this is, chapter 31, very, very significant. 31:31, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. I'll stop reading there, but this isn't mentioned again, this idea of a new covenant, until the end of Luke. Luke's retelling of the Lord's Supper. This is incredible. And the other synoptics don't pick up on it, but he says, this is the blood of my new covenant. So Jesus, at this Passover supper, before his death, quotes the book of Jeremiah. And so he's taking the events there and bringing them back. So what that tells you is, and Jeremiah is divided, chapter 31, but the events leading up to Jeremiah seem to be leading for them to understand what was going on for a future new covenant. And the chapters after reflect that new covenant. So chapter 31 is really the heart of the book. And so that would be the way, the most obvious way I would get to Christ. If I were embedded in the first few chapters, and this is just, and there are several chapters on judgment, the obvious Jesus connection is that this is all the judgment that we deserved, but because he was our substitute, we don't receive. And so you could, several opportunities to point to the glory of Christ.
So pulling this together, again, our listeners on this podcast are primarily pastors, local church ministers, seminary students, and probably the vast majority have never preached the book of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Perhaps the majority have never considered preaching the book of Jeremiah. Any concluding words of advice?
Well, there's some great resources. So I would turn you to Tremper Longman. I was really dependent on Christopher Wright, wonderful, very accessible commentary. And both of those, I think if they were to read those commentaries, just maybe pick a text, pick 29. That's a fun text to preach, or 31. So preach those, be dependent on those commentaries. I think they'll see how God has gifted some people in the church. I don't have the gifting, calling, or time to be an Old Testament scholar. Some people have a gift to do that, and their giftedness is clarity. They make it clear. And just preach one of those and let them see. And I think what my people appreciate about preaching Lamentations is it forced me to connect dots for them. And people love that. Oh, this is why this fits here. And so that part was extremely helpful. So I would say isolate a text, go for it, point it to Christ, and then that'll open a door, be an entree for more.
Stephen, thank you for being in the studio with me on Preaching and Preachers.
Absolutely. Thank you, friend.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.